Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is hour number three on a Throwback Thursday. And if you've been missing this morning, we are going back to 1997 with Charles Sprewell coaching choking P.J. Carlissimo, his head coach at the Golden State Warriors at the time. Yeah, it feels, you know, it's one of those Throwback Thursdays. It's like, yeah, that was a pretty significant moment. And by the way, not that much else was going on, but it's a pretty significant Throwback Thursday. But today is also day one here in 2021 of the baseball lockout. Right now, and I've been saying this morning, right now I wouldn't be panicking if I was a huge baseball fan that the season is going to go away. I think that in the end, with December and January and even getting closer in February to pitchers and catchers reporting, I think some of this stuff is workable. I think in the end, I don't think there is going to be two sides that are so dug in that they're not going to move and we're going to delay any type of the season. Just look at the money teams are paying, right? Look at the Texas Rangers, for example, spending nearly $500 million on two contracts or two guys on their infield. Think of the $43 million a year the Mets are giving Max Scherzer to pitch there. Some other big deals have been kind of flying around lately. Javier Baez going to the Detroit Tigers and whatnot. Now, again, all of the trades and all the free agency, that comes to an end as of midnight last night. But if you see all the money, ask yourself, well, where does it come from? Well, it comes when they play games and all of the revenue they generate from playing games. So the owners are not going to be interested in something and any issue that's going to drive them absolutely into a point where they're not bringing in the kind of revenue that they are putting out on contracts. Because if they're putting it out on contracts, you know they're making even more on the other side. And the players and likewise getting some of these guys making so much money that they may not be as dug into their issue as well. So expect these two sides to come together, soften it up a little bit. But it could get a little dicey. So be prepared for that, because the one thing that we have known over the last few years, and this is the first work stoppage since 1994 and the first lockout since 1990, the 94 was a strike, that these two sides can really say some nasty, nasty stuff to each other when these kind of situations have occurred. But we have had peace in baseball for quite a long time, and now we do not. But who knows how long it's going to last. Could be short, could be long, but I doubt it goes into the regular season. All right, more on the NFL, including tonight's game as we continue, and big Monday night matchup for the Patriots and the Bills, all coming up next.
I know what you're doing. It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
1997 on a Throwback Thursday. Now, this is a good song. Okay, this is a fine representation of the 1997 year.
Late 90s, yeah.
Yeah, late 90s. Got that kind of late 90s sound, however you could define it. But again, going back to Latrell Sprewell choking P.J. Carlissimo.
Not a good representation of the late 90s.
No, not at all. So, anyway, baseball in the lockout, but we got a number of months to go before it really affects the baseball season. I don't think this is anything to worry about.
Not
but then
yet.
Again, you know, remember back in March of 2020 and it was 15 days to, you know, cure, you know, who knows, right? I mean, who knows? We may never see baseball played again. How about that? Oh, God.
At least this time they had the decency to say, you know, let's have the work stoppage or the end of the CBA be in December.
Right, exactly.
Instead
let's do
of,
that.
What was the last time? It was like June or July or something.
So if we start complaining to one another, we can just, you know, we have a few months to sort this thing out.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely.
Or if we're at complete opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, if we're completely if we're at the opposite, yeah, exactly. So I don't think I think they're going to work. If we were still talking about the major issue being a hard cap, then I would go, oh God, forget it. It's going to be a while. It seems like there's a reasonableness that can happen. There can be a little give and take in some of this arbitration stuff and service time stuff. I think both sides can come together and figure this out. But here's the problem, though. Here's the larger issue. You ready for this?
Yep.
Okay, I mentioned earlier in the show about 2011, with the NFL. Remember, the NFL was going through the same kind of thing, and people were saying it was going to be okay, but then privately they were saying, you know, to me anyway, that it was going to be really bad. People were kind of nervous. They love their football. They want their football. And they would miss it if it was gone. Can baseball survive if let's say this is really bad, like they're not even talking, and baseball goes into the regular season, goes into spring training, nothing, goes into the regular season, nothing. It's not about COVID or anything else that can excuse not starting on time. But what about the generation they're still trying to reel in like fish, and that goes, all right, wake me up or shake me when you're playing baseball again.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, you feel like baseball for the last 10 years has been on this fragile thread that could snap at any second. Then now you're having this, you know, I mean, yeah, the month of December, nobody cares. January, you know, fine. We're fine without baseball. When you get towards late February, once the Super Bowl ends and we're starting to look towards, all right, what's coming up in the spring? That's because, you know, that's what we're looking forward to right now.
Exactly.
That's when I think it's, you know, they got to figure it out. They got to come to an agreement, or one side's just got to cave.
Yeah, because if you have a generation that doesn't really follow you anyway, but does because you're just the thing that's on, and then you go away, and they go, that's not good. You want fans to go, please, please, please get your act together. Please, please, please come back. Like, that's what the NFL has. Every time the NFL has one of these things where you go, oh, God, DeMaurice Smith and the league have met. I remember doing stories in 2011 of, like, they met for 10 hours and didn't come up with anything. And I'm like, what did you do in the 10 hours in that room? Just argue all the time?
Well, it took us an hour just to figure out where to get takeout from.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what are you doing in these rooms where nothing's getting accomplished? Right? Where nothing is getting accomplished, not even like any sort of budge whatsoever. But in baseball's case, if you're Rob Manfred, you kind of want the public to go, hey, what are you doing? Get going, get back. Because you want to feel missed if you're not there. Right? But I think you're right. I think because this is a story that's today, because it's the first day, but it's not a story on day 7, 8, 9, because we're not in season and we're not even close. Right. Yeah. There's going to be some diehards that are going to be wondering, well, where does Carlos Correa go? And he can't go anywhere now because they can't talk. Yeah, I get that. Completely get that. Hot Stove League is a lot of fun for teams. I get that. And there's still players that could have been on, that could be on the move, that could be signing. And that has come to an end. I understand. But it's not the games. It's not spring training, that feeling of spring. It's not opening day. That's the danger. If it reaches to that point, then they really have got to get their, you know, get into a room and hammer this out. But I think because it's December 1st and 2nd here, I think that there is some time where both sides can stand to their constituents, right? The Players Association can stand in front of all the players and state how solid they are. And the owners can get together with other owners and say how solid they are. And then one day, everybody has to soften up and come together.
But don't procrastinate.
Don't procrastinate. You know, don't treat this like a holiday, right?
Don't think that you got time off right now going, you know, it's December. They don't even care about us anyway. So,
yeah, that's right.
You know, we'll meet January 2nd, a month from today.
Ryan Ballinger is going to join us. We're going to talk some golf with Tiger Woods' press conference. And it's going to be one of those, you know, larger sort of issue interviews about Tiger and what he thought of the sort of statements Tiger made about his injury and playing and whatnot. And there might even be a little history. We're going to talk about Ben Hogan, who suffered a car accident and then came back and won tournaments. And you heard Tiger say Mr. Hogan and things like that. And we'll talk to Ryan about all of that in context.
Maybe he can.
Maybe he can, is right.
You know, but I know there was a goal of his is to come back and play at St. Andrews.
Right, because it's a big, big one.
And that's his favorite course. And what marks like the 100 years or something like that?
Yeah, it's 150 years or something like that?
Yeah, something ridiculous.
Yes, man, St. Andrews. But also, Ryan's a very, very good golfer. And he knows the swing, and he knows, he'll be able to kind of give us a context of like, all right, well, we know that without really getting into the details of the injury, what exactly is Tiger working against in terms of his leg and stability and all of those kind of things? So I'm looking forward to talking to him about this.
Because I only wish he had a leg amputated. No,
oh, my goodness. Do you remember that golfer, Casey Martin?
Yes, he took a cart.
Yeah, he took a cart. Remember he had that sort of ailment. Yeah, yeah. He had that ailment where his leg, like he needed like compression socks and he could barely walk on it. It was a tremendous amount of pain. There was some sort of condition that he had that really caused him a lot of problems. And he sued to get a medical cart. He didn't call it a golf cart. They called it a medical cart because wording matters, right?
Yep.
In a legal sense. And he was basically saying, look, I can swing a golf club. I can't walk to the ball. And so I remember Jack Nicklaus was like, yeah, but walking to the ball is just as important as hitting it. It's a stamina and playing. And he won his case because they said, look, if you had a guy who could swing a golf club, but he seriously couldn't walk, but you could like he could stand up and hit a golf ball, you can't keep him out of the tour if he's got talent.
All right. Are there PGA fat cats right now from that time? What was that, like 10, 15 years ago now, right? Or maybe even longer?
Casey Martin? I think it was longer. Yeah.
Longer ago? Are they sitting there, sitting back, like with their hands behind their head, feet on their desk, going, yeah, I'm glad we decided that way.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah.
Now it's not going to become the Tiger Woods rule.
Right. Now it's not going to be the Tiger Woods suing us.
Because
right.
I guarantee if Tiger goes, hey, is there any chance I can get a golf cart? They're going to be like, yeah, which one?
Of course. Anything you want.
Do you want this one that looks like a Mercedes?
We'll carry you to the ball. We have to. Yeah, exactly. By the way, Casey Martin, just a side note, became the head golf coach at Oregon and did really well. He's doing really, really well. He did have his leg finally amputated. He had always said, that's the last resort. That's the one thing, one day in my life, that's going to have to happen for me. He did. I think it was in his mid-40s, and he finally had to have the leg amputated. But I remember what a big deal that was.
So which golfer out there is going, oh, I guess he wasn't faking.
Yeah, right. Exactly. He wasn't lazy. He actually did want to drive the golf cart.
He did have a medical condition. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Right. Exactly.
My bad.
Exactly. So we'll talk to Ryan Ballingy about that. One thing we're going to talk more about when we come back is this Monday night game, this apparently big deal Monday night game between the Patriots and the Bills. Because I'm going to ask this question straight up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's if you'd like to chime in on it. Are we ready for what could be coming from every talking head in the world if the Patriots were to win that game? Are we ready for that? Because we've sort of sat back and enjoyed a little bit of the Patriots kind of calming down a bit, right? Right? Yeah, the 1 year without Brady, didn't make the playoffs, kind of COVID year. But if they beat Buffalo and they go into that bye week with a game and a half lead in that division, I guarantee you, here it comes. Here comes the wave of praise for what Belichick and the Patriots are just going to continue to do. And I don't know how many anti-Patriot people out there are ready for. I mean, just when you think you could catch your breath in the AFC, the Patriots may be reestablishing themselves. We'll talk more about that. Plus tonight's game, Dallas and the New Orleans Saints, and revisiting the question if it's a must win for either team as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Have a car problem but don't know where to go? Maybe you're on a road trip when your car breaks down. Let O'Reilly Auto Parts help. With O'Reilly Auto Parts shop referral program, take the guesswork out of finding a great shop wherever you are. Call an O'Reilly location near you or visit O'ReillyAuto.com and click find a repair shop to find a reputable repair facility or service center for your repairs. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. 1997 on a Throwback Thursday, PJ Carlissimo got choked by Lachelle Sprewell at practice for the Golden State Warriors, and Sprewell was suspended for a year, later cut down to 68 games. Cost him $6 million for that one act. Nevertheless, who sang this song? Because this was famous too.
Sean Colvin.
Okay, that's right. This was another one of those hits from the 90s. Ah, yes. The 90s. Before we get to the NFL, without being accused of being the dog in a up, where I go, squirrel.
Yeah.
Right? Without being accused of that, a friend of mine just posted something on Facebook. He is a huge bowler. My friend Jeff, huge bowler. And apparently Mark Roth passed away, who was a kind of an iconic professional bowler at the age of 70. And he posted a video of Mark Roth converting a 7-10 split on TV. Now you may think, ugh, I watched it 4 times during that break. And the reason I watched it 4 times was to see exactly how he did that. He hit the, and I know nothing about bowling. By the way, You won't find a worse bowler on the planet than me. All right. I stink at bowling. I go with my family. I stink. Gutter balls. I can barely. I stink. I have no form. I watched this thing four times because they show his first one and he gets the 7-10. He throws his hands up like, oh. Then he throws the ball down the right side of the lane and he gets it so that it kind of hits the pin and kicks left to knock the pin out. But I'm watching it like, how did he get the ball to get out of the way of the pin that's going to kick left to get the other pin? It's incredible. I watched it four times. Is that a little obsessive?
No, it's, you know, it's one of those science or physics things that boggle the mind. I understand where you're going with this because you hit the pin. The pin's going to run back into the ball a little bit.
Right, that's what I was
thinking.
It's going
to kiss the ball. Maybe the ball is going at such a rate of speed that it gets by the pin in time. I don't know.
It has to hit. It has to kick the pin and get out of the way so that the pin can bounce off and head to the left to knock the other pin down. That's how you have to hit that. And I still can't figure this out. This is like watching one of those golf putts where a golfer is like he's got his back to the hole.
Yeah.
And he hits this putt, and it's like, that's 50 feet off the line. Oh, I get it. Oh, look at that. It's oh, my God, it's going to go in. Bingo.
Well, and you're like, how did he just hit it the wrong way.
He hit it the wrong
look
way.
At the
that's
roll.
That's going east where the pin is over. Oh, no. Oh, my God, he caught the slope. Look at that. That's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I know probably many of you out there are like, the simple things get to Tony D. Yes, the simple things, but still complex get to Tony D. I got to thank my friend for posting this video because I'm flabbergasted by it. I am because I don't know nothing about bowling.
Except, you aim for an arrow, right?
Right. That's pretty much it.
Aim for the arrow. Don't aim for the pins. Aim for the arrow that's on the floor, and the ball should follow that path.
My Uncle Pete is a great bowler. My Uncle Pete was a great bowler.
Well, everyone's
like
Uncle
games.
Pete's a great bowler, Tony.
But I remember one Christmas, I was talking to him about bowling, and I said, listen, I don't know anything about bowling, but I asked him, like, because he was in tournaments and stuff. He's bowled a couple of 300 games. And so I asked him things like, do the bowling balls matter, like, at tournaments? He goes, oh, yeah, you go through 5-6 of them to get the right one. You test out different weights and different sizes. Some roll differently. I'm like, boy, that sounds complex. And then he goes, oh, and then the oil patterns. And he started to explain how different places, different tournaments had different oil patterns, and they would give it to the bowlers. Like, they say, this lane is oiled this way. I'm like, you mean they're not all oiled the same way? He
Wait,
goes,
what?
Oh, no, no. He goes, some are like, have a little bit more oil here, less oil here, no oil here. He goes, that's how you have to navigate the lane. And I was fascinated by it because I didn't think it was that complex.
How
I thought
you
get
know?
Your style and you roll the ball down the lane.
I'm lost.
Me too.
How do you know? Like, is it kind of like the same thing? Like, you know, when you see different colors of grass out of like a baseball field or a football field, it's the same grass. They just cut it a different way.
Right.
Like,
right.
The guy went east and then for this line, he's going west. Is that how it is? Like, you bowl. Okay. I don't know.
Well, remember that
I'm probably
quote
trying
you
to make
played?
Something out of nothing here. I'm confused.
Remember that soundbite you played a while ago of Phil Mickelson? He's like, "Well, if it's fescue grass, and of course you got to add 3 yards to it, and if the grain is going against you, you want to hit it lower because, like, imagine that
and
with
if,
a
and
bowler.
If mercury is rising,
right, right. If you hit it in the morning, you're going to hit it a little bit shorter. But imagine that with a bowler. Like a bowler is doing all the physics and all the science in his head to how to knock down 10 pins ahead of him on a lane.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to say they're making it up.
Anyway.
I mean, that's clear and simple right there.
Folks, if I had not seen that video, I'd be talking about something else, but I saw the video and it's now penetrating my skull. That was an incredible 7-10 split. And he did it on TV, which was really funny. He did it on TV and there was, I probably should share this video with you. There's a huge crowd there watching this professional bowlers match, right? It's like 1980 and it's all old people and they're clapping like crazy. It's wonderful. I used to watch the Pro Bowlers Tour when I was a kid, but it was because it was like the only thing on back in the day when we only had three channels. So I'd watch Chris Schenkel on ABC talking about Earl Anthony, right? Or some other famous bowler of this day. So plus my parents like bowling, so it was on TV. But hey, man, rest in peace, Mark Roth. I didn't know anything about this guy, and now I know you did the 7-10 split, so it's remarkable. All right, NFL tonight, New Orleans losing four in a row. Taysom Hill going to be the starting quarterback tonight. And I hope Taysom Hill is Taysom Hilly because that's the way we like him. But he's got a foot injury, and we don't know if he's going to be that effective. But he can throw a good ball. It does make me wonder, though, and forgive me for challenging Sean Payton because I feel like he's one of those coaches that's been in the NFL for so long that I shouldn't challenge because he's forgotten more football than I'll know. What about Trevor Siemian made him so attractive? The initial decision before Taysom Hill was hurt. What like remember the offseason? We were like, Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill? And now it's clear there wasn't any competition at all. Like, if Taysom Hill can't beat out Trevor Siemian for the job, then what was the big fuss this offseason all about anyway? But I know he's got that foot injury and it's been plaguing him and it's going to bother him tonight. Hopefully he can get around it. Dallas should have Amari Cooper back for this game, coming back after two games missed from COVID. Two games missed. He must have really had COVID. Because some guys get COVID and they miss one game.
Yeah.
Or they barely miss a game. He must have had COVID bad.
Either that or he just couldn't get a positive test. It's like,
or how about this? He told the truth and was quarantined. Ooh. Like a good football player should.
No, don't go there. They would never do that, Tony.
Whereas other players may not have been so honest about whether or not they had COVID and then finally went, all right, I got COVID. I'm a week into it. Sorry. I'm just saying. All right, that was very irresponsible of me to sort of accuse other players from lying about their COVID status. But anyway, Amari Cooper should come back. That should add some fight to the Cowboys lineup. Mike McCarthy will not be on the sideline. Were you surprised yesterday when we had Bobby Belt on? And he said it's not even going to be a big deal because the joke in Dallas is, what does Mike McCarthy do anyway?
I wasn't surprised. one of the things that was in the back of mind was like, maybe Dallas doesn't know that.
Right.
You know, like the rest of the country, you know, we're not blinded by the Cowboys stars.
Yeah, right. Who's the offensive coordinator? Kellen Moore, right? He's the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
So, like, he calls the plays, and Dan Quinn calls the defensive plays,
yep.
And Mike McCarthy just holds the play chart over his mouth. So,
yeah,
he's not.
Jerry Jones runs the team. He's the general manager. And we know for a fact he doesn't go down to Mike McCarthy like, hey, well, what player do you want? What position are you looking for? He just goes out and gets them.
You got to trust me on this. If you're a head coach in the NFL, don't you, with the money these guys are making, don't you think you have to, in some way, prove your value?
Well, isn't that like...
If Bobby Belt is right, there's an actual kind of minor joke about what does McCarthy do, I'd have a hard time signing that check every single week.
Well, I mean, it makes sense, though.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
sure.
For years, I mean, Jason Garrett, I mean, he didn't even last as the offensive coordinator for the Giants.
No.
He was recently fired. But we knew for the longest time, like, he's only the coach because he's Jerry Jones' puppet.
Yeah, that's right.
That was the joke. I mean, maybe, you know, I know he was a great offensive coordinator under, God, who was he under? Barry Switzer? No.
Oh, goodness. Was it Bill Parcells?
Maybe it was Bill Parcells. Yeah. But that's also the reason why we know Bill Parcells didn't last there.
Yeah.
Because Bill Parcells actually wanted to coach a team.
Right. Wouldn't be a puppet. Exactly. But nevertheless, we'll see tonight. Is Dan Quinn, our good friend, Dan Quinn, who we used to criticize in Atlanta all the time for supposedly having a great defense and yet not showing it whatsoever when he was the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. Supposed to be this defensive genius.
Yeah.
And yet
hey,
the Falcons
got him
give
to
up
a
like
Super Bowl, Tony.
Points. He did. Just, you know, something.
Yeah, just the most epic collapse by a defense ever.
Yeah. I don't know if I blame. Do you blame him or Kyle Shanahan? For calling some bad plays, like let's throw it all the time to stop the clock.
both of them got to take the L on
both
that
of them. Oh yeah, I think because, if you're up 28-3 and your defense can't stop it, that's your fault.
Yeah,
yeah, that is on you.
Yeah, I mean honestly, I mean he was the creator of the Legion of Boom.
That's right. That's how he got the job in Atlanta in the first place.
That's how he got the job in Atlanta
because he did a brilliant job with that defense in Seattle. Daryl Bevins that screwed that one up. That could have been a dynasty. That could have been one of the greatest teams of all time.
Yep.
Stupid. Throw it on that goal line. Crazy. But we'll see Dan Quinn back on the sidelines tonight when he takes over head coaching duties for the Dallas Cowboys in their game against the Saints. Both teams really need a win. Saints have lost four in a row. Cowboys have dropped three of four.
What if he gets the Cowboys out to a huge lead and then blows it?
Interesting. Ryan Ballinger is going to join us next. We'll talk about the Tiger Woods press conference and the ramifications of that as we could be looking at the end of an era. That's next on Wake Up Call.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, waiting on Ryan Ballingy of Golf News Net. We're going to talk to him about Tiger Woods and the press conference he had just the other day at the Hero World Challenge. And again, you guys have listened. If you listen to the show for a while, you know, I always say this. I'm a big picture guy. And some of these stories in sports, we can get into the nitty grittiness of X's and O's and the way games are executed. But sometimes there's a story that's a little larger. And this story is absolutely on that level. What Tiger was saying in this press conference at the Hero World Challenge was basically saying, while I hope to play again, I'm going to be okay if I never be as competitive as I was before. That this accident, he was lucky to be alive. He was lucky they were able to save the leg, and that he is going to continue on as a golfer, but not the Tiger Woods you know. And then for those of us who watched him from a junior golfer, amateur golfer, college golfer, all the way through to his professional career, and you know, knew we were seeing something so unique, an athlete that was so different than the other athletes within his sport, just another level of athlete, right, that we were seeing something special. We weren't just seeing another really good golfer. We were seeing somebody that belonged outside of his sport on a list of athletes that are just beyond their sport. Like, it just in that same company of like Wayne Gretzky, right? It's like the people who saw Wayne Gretzky for the first time, you know, went, this is going to be amazing. This kid's going to be on another plane. And he was, right? Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, you know, the athletes that go beyond just being the best at their sport. And that was Tiger. And so with that in mind, I mean, think of this press conference as sort of a way of Tiger saying, I'm probably never going to win another major again, and that's going to be okay. And if that's the case, there's a lot of questions to answer about this, right? I mean, one question that I have is, how much does expectation go into the way we view an athlete? Can an athlete have a great career, not meet the expectations, and yet somehow we ignore the great career? Ryan Ballingy joining us on Golf News Net on a Progressive Guest Line. How are you, Ryan?
Good, Tony. How are you?
Good. So I was just talking about this large story here with Tiger Woods, and I felt like this press conference wasn't just a how am I doing press conference. It felt like it was a bit more. What was your takeaway from the things he said about his golf career, the accident, and his future?
I think at a core level, he wants to move beyond the physical accident, the details of it, and the shortcomings personally being involved with it as quickly as humanly possible. And he would just like to move on to the what next part. And I think he's wrestling with that. I don't think he has a clear answer on what's next. And I wrote about that some for our website. I feel like he's trying to figure out whether he wants to try to do what he's done so many times in his career again, which is kind of start from way less than where he was and try to regain some measure of dominance over the game, fully knowing that he's going to turn 46 years old in 4 weeks. And he's got apparently a shattered right leg that's healing, albeit slowly, and an uncertain future about what he can do mechanically and physically, and whether that means he can be a part-time or zero-time player on the PGA Tour. So I think it's kind of in real time him trying to assess, here's where I think I might be, and here's where I think I might be able to go, but a lot of question marks and a lot of gray area.
He may not have said it or alluded to it. Did you feel there was a sense of finality about him being a major chaser again?
I think there's going to be a lot of parsing of this line where he said, I got that last major. And you can read it one of two ways. You can read it as, that is the final major I feel I'm ever going to win, or that's the last one I've won so far. And I think the tendency, especially after the injuries that he suffered, is to think that he feels that's it. It's never going to happen again. But he probably also thought it's never going to happen again to some degree after two microdiscectomies, three back surgeries, and everything that he went through in 2015-16. So I'm sure there are moments of doubt there. I think he believes somewhere in the recesses of his mind that he could be like Ben Hogan, that, yeah, he caused his own car accident, but Hogan recovered from the one in 1949 and won six majors after that. Yeah. A little bit different circumstance probably, but I think he tends to turn to history for hope when he can't find it in himself.
Can you give us an idea, because for those of us who have no clue what a professional golfer's swing is like on the body, can you give us some idea of what that leg does and what strain it has on what he's trying to do with a golf ball?
Yeah, and a right-handed golfer, your right leg is really, specifically your heel, is really where you're generating power. That's the kind of gas pedal, so to speak, from a technical perspective. So that's where you generate a lot of power and speed using the ground to your advantage. It's part of the modern golf swing. Fortunately for Tiger, he also learned to play golf in an era where we didn't teach that, where the ground, you used it but weren't really aware of it. So perhaps it doesn't necessarily work entirely to his detriment that he knows a world of playing golf without that kind of modern teaching. That all said, you still really need your right heel and your right foot to work really hard in the golf swing to give you the kind of power that you need, the footwork that you need. And he's going to have to find a workaround for that because it doesn't seem like it's going to get dramatically better than wherever it's going to be a few months from now. That's just the reality of kind of shattering bones in your feet. So I think, and he alluded to this in his news conference, that he's going to have to find a way to generate speed. And if he can, then he'll feel like he's got a chance. If he can't, then he doesn't know if he's able to compete as a golfer at this level in a world where you have players like Bryson and Brooks and DJ and Rory and Justin Thomas. I mean, going down the line of players who just nuke the golf ball off the tee, it's going to be really difficult for him to compete if he's 30 and 40 yards behind them.
Yeah. Can he compete like Tom Watson did at the British Open, or some, we've seen some 50-year-olds at the British Open where maybe length isn't such a big deal, but placement is.
Yeah, and he's clung to that exact example of Tom Watson in the 2009 Open basically being a yard too long to win perhaps the greatest victory in major championship history. And I think now he's trying to cling to Hogan because maybe some similar circumstance, similar circumstance around the car accident. I think you're right, though, and I think that's how he's going to try to play this if he moves forward, is trying to play in tournaments on the regular that are places he knows has won at more than anybody, just has that awareness and knowledge of the golf course is just better than anybody, and hope that is good enough with whatever he has physically. But like you said, in the Open Championship in particular, length doesn't necessarily matter. It could, but in most of the venues, it doesn't. And I think that's where he feels like if there's anywhere to move from here, he can do it there in terms of major tally, because the PGA Championship is going to be a go-low fest. The rough is just going to be a lot for him at the U.S. Open. And then, of course, we throw out Augusta National because there's a whole lot of benefits for him at Augusta National given his course history. So I think we've talked about this with past injuries. If you're going to kind of pare down where he could be successful given his capability, however limited it is, it's Augusta National and whatever place in the Open venue's hosting that year.
I'm going to ask you to speculate in the future a little bit here. I used this example earlier this week where I said, look, when I was a kid, I used to love baseball stats. So I used to dive into the history of the sport. And I remember when the steroid era hit, I remember thinking, what would a future generation do if they looked back and saw 40 home runs won you the title, but then there was this era where you had 60 and 70 and whatnot. And then somebody's going to say, hey, somebody explain how this happened. With Tiger Woods, do you think there's a future generation that will never see him play that will say, this guy's on the record book for this long in this many majors, and then he just disappears, and we have to sort of explain why?
I don't think so. I mean, I think if you look at Jack Nicklaus's career, and he's obviously the kind of gold standard in terms of major tally, in an era where majors mattered. It didn't necessarily matter as much for a Hogan or a Jones. I mean, they racked them up, but it didn't matter as much. But if you think about Nicklaus, you basically have 24 years where he won majors,
yeah,
you know, from 86 down to, 62? And then for Tiger, you've got 97 through 2019. I mean, it's not that different. It might seem a whole lot different in terms of how they got to those couple of decades plus of major championship wins. But that's kind of your run. I mean, I think that the two best ever to do it, that's kind of the precedent, whether it's self-inflicted or not, injury-inflicted or not, that's up to you, or those individual cases. But I think when we look at Tiger and when people who are younger than us, who are maybe don't exist yet, look at Tiger and try to compare him to Jack, there's going to be a whole lot more intrigue in the details of those 25 years than Nicklaus. But I don't think it's going to be all that disparate in terms of for how long they dominated the sport.
Yeah, because how much expectation really falls on the athlete? I mean, again, I know Tiger came in with big fanfare, his dad, and sort of the proclamations that he made. But in the end, his failure to catch Jack is and how we look at that, isn't that really on us rather than him? I mean, in the end, he had one of the greatest athletic accomplishments in the history of all sports.
Absolutely. And I think the comparisons between Jack and Tiger will temper over time. It'll be less about who was better, and it'll be more about how they got there differently.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you look at Jack, he had 19 second-place finishes in majors and 18 third-place finishes in majors. He had 37 close calls that he didn't win in majors. Tiger has nothing like that. He, instead, was the most dominant, most prolifically dominant golfer in the history of the sport. And to win four in a row, yeah, it's not the same year. I don't care. He won four in a row. He held the Grand Slam. That hasn't ever been done by anybody else in the modern era. And I'm not sure that it will ever be done by anybody else.
Yeah, so many different combinations into the success of Tiger, from race to talent to expectations and everything. But I doubt we'll see another guy have the complete package that takes the game to the stratosphere he took it.
Yeah, I mean, Tiger fundamentally kind of changed the perception of the sport. I mean, Jack was a power player. I mean, he hit
right.
it farther than everybody. He hit it high just like Tiger. I mean, he did all the things Tiger did. It just didn't quite look as flashy as the way Tiger did it, with a lot of confidence, a swag, there was an audacity in his opponents to even try to question him. Jack didn't seem to have that. I mean, he did, but he played it a little bit differently. And whoever comes after Tiger, whoever the next person is going to be, that's going to be that generational talent, and we're probably going to have to wait 20 years to figure out who that is, but whoever that's going to be, they've got to take the game farther. They can't just be a replica of Tiger, and I feel like when you're playing in that generational great, that all-time great shadow, it's really hard to do something different when you're looking at the top and seeing what the best ever is doing.
Ryan Ballinger, Golf News Net. One final quick question about Tiger. Do you think down the road, and again, I'm sorry to keep asking you to speculate, down the road, do you see him as a guy that will always show up at Augusta, be willing to hit the first ball off the tee, become an elder statesman of the game, show up at the British Open at 60, 65, that kind of guy?
I do, and I think we saw that to a degree when he was going through the recovery from the back injuries, and that he was starting to kind of open up about being what he's going to ultimately have to become, because Father Time's going to win. He's going to have to, if he wants to be a part of the game, and it seems sincerely that he does, I think he's going to have to recognize that he's going to have to take on some kind of statesman-type role, whether that's teeing off, being the ceremonial tee shot, whether that's kind of being the guy that just waves to people. But he mentioned something really interesting yesterday that I've never really heard him talk about, at least in a news conference, and he said he's 4 years from riding in a cart, which he means 4 years from now, he's eligible for the Champions Tour, for PGA Tour Champions.
Yeah.
And I don't think he has ever said publicly, even in a vague allusion, that he's interested in playing in that. But it sure sounded like, from the way he put it, that maybe he is interested in chasing after the occasional senior major. And maybe that he's seen what Phil Mickelson has done in his limited PGA Tour champion starts, winning two-thirds of them, basically, and thinking, well, if he can do it, I whooped him for 20 years. Surely I can do it, too.
Ryan, always good talking to you, my friend. You really bring it every time we have it on with the golf world. Really appreciate it, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
You got it. Ryan Ballinger, Golf News Net is his website. You got to check it out. Just giving you the kind of feeling of what Tiger Woods was saying earlier this week at the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas. That is his tournament to benefit his charity. But he said some very interesting things. All right, it's Wake Up Call as we continue on Sports Map Radio.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, again, thanks to Ryan Ballinger and our Progressive guest line. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at Progressive.com. And this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life, Rocket can. Did you feel kind of sad a little on this Tiger story?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did too.
I'm not ready for this chapter.
I'm not either. I
feel like putting the book down, and I'll come back to it later.
You know what? We talked about the Patriots. Remember we talked about the Patriots, about how people were like, yeah, this guy, Tom Brady, yeah. And then after they were winning, you're like, oh, God, I'm so sick of them. We never felt that way about Tiger.
No.
As a country.
Because we got cheated.
I,
That was I don't think it would ever came to that anyways. I mean, 2008, 2009, when he went through all his struggles and, you know, was recovering from his injuries and stuff, you know, it became a we were jonesing for him.
Right, but when he was playing when he was winning the Slam, the Tiger Slam, like did we root for Bob May to beat him at Valhalla? No, not at all. Like, we didn't root for the underdog against Tiger. We always, as a country, seem to pull for Tiger all the time.
Couldn't wait for that Red and Black Sunday.
Exactly, and here was the thing about his dominance. He would be in tournaments where. Majors where he'd have a 5-shot lead and the ratings were through the roof. Nobody would even turn away to watch him dominate the field. Like, well, we watched everything.
You wanted to see how much, even when it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to win, you wanted to see by how much.
Exactly.
I mean, with other tournaments, I mean, you know, if Brooks Koepka is up by a lot heading in, there's like five holes to go, you might find something else to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
you might be like, you know, where it's already in the bag. You're like, all right, I don't want to watch this. But with Tiger, like when he was at Pebble Beach and it was like 18 in front of everyone.
Unbelievable dominance at Pebble Beach of the U.S. Open. It's like unbelievable. Yeah. It's like almost inhuman. Like you couldn't, for one guy to win to beat the course like that and nobody else did, not one other professional golfer was close to breaking par and he was double digits under par.
Yeah, and we couldn't turn away.
Couldn't turn away. Unreal. Denton Day is coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow as the Friday edition of Wake Up Call. Have a good rest of your day.